Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of August 22nd. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a lovely, lovely Sunday morning, the last day of the Olympics, technically, in Japan, is Jim Allen. What's happening, buddy? How you doing? You still awake?
I am. Well, I don't know if still awake is the word, but I am alert. And the Olympics, it is the last day of the Olympics. And yeah, looking forward to this.
Thank goodness, huh? Thank goodness. I know you've been, you said vampire hours. I think it's more like trying to kill yourself, the slow death.
No. I'm actually not enjoying it to the extent I had anticipated, but yeah, it has been a challenge. You know, this basically jet lag life existence of trying to get home and sleep from 7 in the morning until 3 in the afternoon. So, but yeah, it's over and I'm done with it. And I haven't killed myself. I'm getting fat sitting around the office eating junk food.
Yeah, that happens. All right. Well, it's the last day. All right. We are ready to ride on this week's show. We've got an interview with Mauro Gomez of the Hanshin Tigers, and we're going to talk about the Tigers and the PL and CL races. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I was at Tokyo Dome a few days ago, Friday afternoon, when Mauro Gomez and the Tigers came into Tokyo to play the Yomiuri Giants. And Mauro is, of course, a very, accommodating fellow. And he said, yeah, we'll talk. And so we went back in the mirror room behind the visiting dugout. And it's smaller than the mirror room. At the Giants dugout, which is really big.
Yeah, why is that, I wonder? That's not fair.
Yeah, why, I wonder. Well, they use it for, you know, different things, and that space is split in two. And we had two young Tigers players practicing their swings, one of them about a foot away from my head. And so actually sometimes on the tape you might hear this whoosh sound. And that's not the bat, that's me turning my head to make sure the bat isn't going to connect with the back of my head.
Wow.
So, anyway, Mauro played in 37 games in 2012 for the Boston Red Sox. That was his major league career.
Wow.
And that year, they were managed by Bobby Valentine.
I remember that. I remember that season.
Yeah, a lot of people have been trying to forget that season. Now, he spent, not Valentine, but Mauro spent most of his time in the low minors with the Texas Rangers, and then he played briefly in the Braves and Red Sox organizations before finishing with the Blue Jays in AAA in 2013, where he was managed with the Buffalo Bisons by current Washington Nationals scout and former Hiroshima Carp and Rakuten Eagles manager Marty Brown.
Right, yeah.
Right, so, you know, it was kind of interesting. I've been thinking about that connection for the last couple of weeks since we talked to Mike Zagorski.
Right.
You know, so I was thinking of some of his teammates. Now, Mauro joined Hanshin in 2014, and he's in his third season. Now, he's 32 this year.
Right.
And he went into a slump, and it was publicized when he was dropped. I think twice he was dropped from his standard spot in the order, which is third or fourth, down to fifth and sixth. And it was sort of news in Hanshin land. But, you know, in Hanshin land, everything's news.
Right.
You know, Kyuji Fujikawa has said that he likes country and Western music. Front page.
Right.
So,
for no reason.
Right. And then right about the All-Star break, he began executing better at the plate, and things have been kind of happy since then. So let's have a listen to what we spoke of the other day. Okay, our guest today on the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast is Mauro Gomez of the Hanshin Tigers. Always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. You know, my pleasure every time.
Oh, yeah. So anyway, it's been the, you know, we were talking, it's been kind of a tough year for you up and down, especially down. And you said that was the interleague was causing that, maybe, or your timing during the interleague?
Yeah. You know, I was fine. The soon interleague started, you know, I think I was trying to do too much. And, you know, been swinging a lot of balls. And, you know, but it's past, you know. Now I've been working, you know, trying to get better, and I feel a little better now.
Now, when you find you're doing that, you're hitting, going after pitches you shouldn't be going after. How do you get out of that? Because it seems like a kind of a vicious cycle. You know, your strike zone gets bigger and bigger, and
here's tough. You know, they know how to pitch. As soon you swing, you know, fork for ball, next pitch is gonna be full again. You know,
yeah.
So you gotta be, you know, disciplined how to play, and you know, try to get, you know, good pitch and get a hit. But here, they, like I say, they know how to pitch. It's tough here.
Mm. Yeah, certainly. You know, if you're making it easier for them, maybe it's hard to see any strikes at all.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's fewer pitches to choose from. So when did you realize it was a problem, and how long did it take you to sort of correct that? Because you got to be playing every day.
Yeah. I mean, take me for, you know, a couple months, I say.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, but every day, you know, I working with Theo, with hitting coach, and like I said, you know, now I feel much better.
Mm.
You know, just trying to be relaxed and mm-hmm. looking for a good pitch, and you know, just try to get a hit, try to make contact.
Okay. So yeah, obviously it's not easy. I mean, I don't have to go out there and do that every day. And if you got a problem, everybody knows it.
Yep.
it's not easy. And we were talking about some of the young kids. You know, I guess three really stand out: Shin Takayama, the outfielder, and Hojo, the mm-hmm. infielder, and Haraguchi, the catcher. Now, I asked before, you know, what's it like playing with these young kids, you know, who are just sort of like getting their feet wet, and sometimes do you want to like say, give them some advice?
You know, it's fun. Look at this guy, you know, young guys, you know, play like that.
Mm.
It's pretty good. And I think, you know, Hanshin Tigers, you know, they're going to have good future, you know, mm-hmm. with those guys. I think maybe, you know, next 2-3 years, they're gonna be, you know, pretty good. Like, you know, hitting for average, home run, and everything. You know, I think Hoyo, he got, you know, pretty good defense too.
Mm.
And you know, it's fun. It's fun to watch those young guys, you know, playing.
When you watch those kids, do you think, you know, do you think back when you were a young guy and thinking coming up and thinking, man, I wish I was that age again? Or
yeah, I mean, you know, it's fun when you're young, you know, you're just working hard, you know, you just try to do the best, you know,
mm-hmm.
and they doing it right now, you know. Takayama?
Yeah, the guy who started in the beginning of the season.
Yeah, he's, you know, he's awesome. He's pretty good guy too, you know, good teammate.
Okay.
He always joking around and
wow.
Everything.
That's hard when you're a young
yeah,
kid, especially
yeah.
You're playing for Hanshin. There's so much pressure on this team.
It is a little bit, yeah.
So a couple other things I just wanted to ask you about was I noticed that, I guess, 2013, you were in the minor leagues in Boston, in Buffalo.
Yeah, AAA.
It was like a Japanese team.
yeah. A lot of guys playing, you know. I got Kawasaki.
Yeah.
He's the best. He's awesome. He's funny too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's kind of a unique player for just kind of unique.
Mhm. Yeah. He's, you know, he always joking around, and you know, he's fun. And I play with Anita.
Mhm.
He's here now.
Yeah.
Carlisle, I think.
Buddy Carlisle.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's a former Tiger.
Yeah. Mexican Gonzalez.
Edgar Gonzalez.
Yep.
Yeah, he's now the coach of Mexico in
yeah.
the WBC.
Yeah, so, you know, a lot of guys, you know, play here in Japan. I play with them in AAA. So, you know, I think it was fun that year. Mari Brown, he was my manager too.
Right.
He manager here too.
But you told me that wasn't your first person who said maybe you would do well in Japan.
No. Like I say, 2011, Martinez.
Domingo Martinez,
yeah.
Wow.
He always in Winter League, Dominican.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, and he told me, you know, if he, I got offer from Japan, you know, to play here, and I say, no, not yet. He told me, you know, I can do it. I can do well over here.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, he did well for 4 years.
Mm-hmm. He was a good player here.
Yeah, I remember he told me when he was with Cebu, he was a DH mm-hmm. and a first baseman, and then when he came to the Giants, he had to play outfield. And I said, which do you like? He says, oh, DH, because I got to run too far to go to the outfield.
Yeah, that's true. DH is just be ready for it. That's it. It's easy.
Okay. One of the things, another thing I wanted to ask you was, a lot of the guys with the Tigers that tell me, you know, this team can be really uptight, you know, with the media, you know, the local media, and before the game, everybody knows what's being written about the Tigers and what they're saying on TV. Was that different this year? Because a lot of us thought with Kanemoto being the manager, because he's a real tough guy, he's like a Tigers hero, you know, he could sort of block out that kind of stuff. But is it the same? Nothing changed?
I say same, yeah. For me, because okay. I mean, you know, I don't know how to read the paper, you know, and everything. So I'm not.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm like, yeah. I don't care, you know, what they say or not, you know. Just, but it is, you know, very difficult because you know, you got the media always, you know, asking questions and everything.
Yeah, hate those guys. Like me.
No.
I'm joking.
Yeah, I know. But you know, it's like, you know how it is. You know how
sure.
it is. You know, like I say, Giants, Hanshin, you know, media, yeah. they're very strong. You know.
Yeah.
So you gotta play, you know, good, because if you know, you're gonna win the paper.
Yeah. Yeah. Know? Matt said, you know, no matter either he wins or lose, they found a way to put him on the front page.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah.
And so. When you dropped down in the batting order, it was like national news.
Yep. So it's tough, you know, like play for Hanshin, play for Giants, you know, it's very difficult.
I bet.
I mean, because the media, like, you know, they push you, you know, you gotta do well. But like I said, you know, for me, I don't read papers.
Right.
I just come here every day, try to do my best.
Mm-hmm.
If, you know, if I make an error or I don't get hit, it's pass, you know. I'm thinking for the next day.
Okay. Now, when you came to the Tigers, I guess, when you signed with the Tigers, who told you what to expect? Who called you and said, Mauro, this is, you know, what you got to be prepared for when you come to Japan? Was it Tom or was it Andy Sheets? Or?
When I signed, I talked to Luna.
Oh, okay.
Luna, he was his first year here.
Okay.
And, you know, he asked me about, you know, and he told me, you know, it's not easy here, you know. They know how to pitch. So you got to be, you know, consistent, like, disciplined to play, looking for your pitch. And, They work hard here too, so you gotta be in shape, you gotta be ready, all that stuff, you know.
Mm.
So he gave me, you know, some heads up, you know.
Right. So now if you got friends in the Dominican and you got signed by a Japanese team, what's the first thing you want to tell them?
Just be ready, you know. Just if it's a hitter, you know. Just be ready, like they, you know, they
ready, like first day of spring training. Be ready.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, just, you know, they be ready. They, it's not easy over there. You know, they work hard,
mm-hmm.
really hard, and as a hitter, you know, it's not easy.
Yeah.
Like I hear people, you know, before I came here, like when I played in the minor league,
mm-hmm.
people say, you know, oh, Japan, you know, it's easy, whatever. Now I'm here and I know it's not. They know how to pitch. Like every star, they got four or five different pitch, you know. So you don't know what's coming. So
that's the big the biggest thing for you is the control of the secondary pitches.
I say yes. I say, you know, the all, like I said, you know, they every star they have four or five different, you know, and everyone they throw for a strike. And the other thing is, you know, strike zone here is big.
It's big.
Yeah.
The bigger you are, the bigger the strikes are.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
The wider.
Yeah. It's, you know, inside, outside, so.
Is that, you know, we were talking about your having difficulty hitting, you know, swinging at pitches out of the zone. Is that, sometimes you get into that, like, they're going to call that a strike, I got to swing?
I say yes. Mm. Because, you know, sometimes you take a pitch, you think it's a ball, and they call a strike. So next time, you know, when you see the pitch over right there, so you got to swing because in your mind you think they're going to call a strike.
You call a strike anyway, whether
yeah.
you swing or not.
Yeah. So, it's, you know, it's tough here. It's tough. A lot of things here, you know.
So
it's quite different.
So in looking back, has your approach to hitting or your thinking about hitting changed a lot since before you came to Japan? Or is it still basically the same? You know, wait for your pitch and hit your pitch?
No, when I played in the States, you know, I was ready for fastball and react.
Yeah.
React for, you know, slider or
okay.
any pitch. But here I say I'm, you know, in between.
Okay.
Just, you know, just
more look expecting a breaking ball and then react to the fastball.
Not
that's
really.
Hard,
not
right?
Yeah, not really, but like more like the state when I got two strike, I'm you know like start to make contact.
Mm-hmm.
Here, the swing I got to the batting box.
Okay.
I'm like a two strike
contact hitter. Wow.
Because here you know a lot of split, fork, slider, changer, everything. They throw everything here.
You get a lot of different arm angles. And
yeah.
Was that the part of the difficulty you had in the interleague, was just seeing the different arm angles and the pitchers you're not used to?
I say interleague, I was more like thinking fastball.
Okay.
Yeah, because, you know, they, I mean, some people say, you know, the otherly, they throw more fastball, you know, they throw more hard.
Well, I've heard that, yeah.
So, I say, okay, so I'm gonna, you know, just try to, but they would four slider, you know, a lot of breaking pitch, you know.
Must have been kind of frustrating.
Yeah, it was a little bit. But like I said, you know, it's my fault, you know, I gotta be, you know, disciplined to play and just looking for the pitch. So I was trying to do too much.
Yeah.
And, you know, swing balls.
Okay, well, we're glad that, you know, you're back in, you're playing every day, and you're hitting a little more consistently.
Yeah. Like I say, you know, after that, I just keep working, and like I say, I feel more better now, and I hope today, you know, try to get a couple of hits.
All right. Okay, well, thank you very much for sharing your experience with us, and good luck the rest of the season.
Thank you.
So hopefully, you know, come the end of October, you guys still be playing.
You never know.
All right.
Still got a chance.
Okay.
Well, thanks again, Mauro. Always a pleasure. Good to see you, buddy. Sorry I took so much of your time there when you were probably, your stomach was probably growling.
Yeah, that was pretty long, but it was good. I enjoyed the fact that you were able to, and like you said, he was very accommodating, and it's so nice. Remember, I told you I went out to talk to Tom O'Malley a few weeks back, and
mm-hmm.
I did get some time with Mauro, and we spoke, and he'll stop and talk to you. It's different. You know, there's some players who won't do that, and there are other players who will, and he's one of the guys who'll stop and give you as much time as you need, obviously.
Yeah, even at times that my language isn't connecting with his, and he's going like, what's this guy talking about? You know, speak English, dude.
I don't think it's a language problem, but anyway.
Hashtag hi.
Yeah, I can just be a stubborn cuss sometimes. Get that from my dad. Okay. So anyway, what would you like to comment about?
Well, I'm glad you asked it that way because there's so much in the chat. But I would just there's one thing that just started grinding my gears, and I've heard it with these Central League players more so than the Pacific League players. And I gather, you know, they're tired of getting their heads crushed in interleague play.
Mm-hmm.
But it just seemed to me that this one section, and it just confuses me. He Mauro talked about having his timing thrown off when he was playing in interleague. But then he said that even when he came back, after they got beaten up by PL pitchers, essentially, that he struggled for an extended time going back into the Central League. And I'm just curious, you know, about how we get this from the CL sides. You know, are they not enjoying the interleague sessions? Do they just want to play against guys who they've done the homework already, they've faced them already, they've got video and experience, and they just want to go up against these guys they know? Or is it just that they don't want to put in extra work, extra video? And, you know, I would think, from my perspective as a player, getting the chance to play against the PL teams means that if we do win, if my team wins and we get into the playoffs, that I've seen some of these guys already, and I don't have to wonder, well, I've only seen the guy on video. I don't know what he throws, or I don't know what they throw in the count. I would rather have faced the guys and lost than, you know, not to have loved at all.
Yeah, I had a funny feeling you were going to go there, but you know, good for you. I'd have done the same.
So I'm getting frustrated hearing these kinds of things, and that it threw his timing off for a while back into the Central League. What's going on here?
I said timing. And one of the things with Mauro and some players and some Japanese players is they kind of don't really get, we're not on the same wavelength with the question. So I said timing, and he said, yeah.
Okay.
And I don't think it really was the timing.
Hmm.
I think he was just saying, yeah, you know, that wasn't, okay, let's move, okay, whatever. He said timing, okay, whatever. And I didn't get the impression it really was the timing, you know, because that's normally, I think he was looking for an answer, and we got to the answer, of course, at the end, I think, when it was all about plate discipline and approach rather than timing. Although I think what happens is the timing comes later. Once you're messed up, the timing goes. But I hear that. I heard that too, and we never talked about timing again.
Yeah, well, he did talk about the fact that, and of course, you know, you said before we started taping, his eyes lit up when you got into the strike zone talk, but, you know, I see it a lot where a batter takes a pitch that obviously it's borderline because the umpire is calling it a strike and he's taking it because thinking it's not a strike. However, I've seen some guys take some pitches that probably should have been called a ball, and that forces them to have to swing at the same pitch the next time they see it because they think it's going to be called a strike again. And with the pitcher knowing this, just like Mauro said, if they get that call, they're going to throw the same pitch.
Right.
But not in the same location always. They disguise it as the same location. It's even farther off the plate, and they can't, you know, as a hitter, you can't do anything with it. And I've seen that kind of frustration. So I know, you know, you are very brave. I don't talk balls and strikes with hitters or pitchers anymore. I gave up on that after one bad experience.
Yeah, John's still actually, if you see, we're talking on video, and it's when he laughs the right way, you can still see the scar.
Yeah.
So that one, that last time he did that, left a mark.
Yeah. So yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm just tired of hearing excuses from Central League teams, and I don't know if it's an excuse or if they just are defeated.
But
it's just a defeatist attitude, that they're looking for an escape, and that they just rather face Central League players, pitchers, and guys they know. I don't know what it is, but I'm very concerned when I hear stuff like that.
Well, I was so pleased when he came out and said, you know, I think this is what went wrong and it was all my fault. That's not something I'm used to hearing. I mean, players are used to owning, you know, you got to own it when things ain't working. When you're getting beat, you got to figure it out.
Exactly.
And obviously, he when you look at his numbers, you can see he's been figuring it out. And I don't think it was the timing, but I think it was, I'm certainly with you in the sense that you get the feeling he's saying, these Central League guys with all their breaking balls, man, I want to go back where it's meat and potato, fastballs, hit, miss, or whatever. I'm going to be sitting on fastballs and they're going to be challenging me. You know, there was almost like somebody told him it was, I don't know what it was going to be like, old school night, you know,
70s like night. Almost,
yeah, something like a throwback, you know. Oh, what does that mean? It means I can wear those old clothes that, you know, that have been sitting there. I don't have to wash nothing because, you know,
whoa, you got to wash everything, buddy.
No, I mean, they're sitting in the, you know, they're hanging in the closet and they're good to go. And I really can't wear them because they're out of style. But tonight I can. So that means I don't have to do the laundry today. I'm taking a day off. Right. I'm taking a day off my preparation and I'm going to be looking for a fastball.
Okay.
So I got that feeling, you know, he was sort of like looking forward to it so much that he kind of took it easy. And I think, I think that's part of the thing, you know, he's going, I'm going to go up there looking for fastballs. They're going to give me fastballs. Everything's going to be groovy.
Now, I also love what he said about being in between when he plays in Japan, not sitting fastball and then being able to react to the off-speed stuff, but stepping in the batter's box with the two-strike attitude.
Yeah.
I really like that because that tells me, and I remember Rick Shorter used to play with the Eagles back in the day. You know, he always used to talk about he wants to see guys hit with two strikes and see how they do. And those are the guys that he would probably bring to Japan because those are the guys who can make adjustments on the fly and they're thinking and they're not just taking their swings at two strikes. They're shortening, they're getting compact and looking to get the ball in play. And of course, you know, not try to drive the ball, but try to get a hit. And if Maruta is stepping up to the plate with that kind of attitude because the guys are throwing any pitch in any count, that's going to obviously breed more success for him at the plate, at least in terms of making contact. And he's so strong, you know, if he makes decent contact, he's going to get it out of the infield. Now, after that, you know, who knows? Mm. But he might not be hitting for home runs for a lot of power, but I think that's a good approach for a lot of foreign batters when they come over here. That would be the thing that I would tell them.
Yeah, I was thinking more or less the same thing, which is I find fundamentally kind of scary when you and I are on the same wavelength. I mean, it's weird. It's both fun and weird.
Fundamentally scary. Fun and weird.
So, well, I was thinking, you know, I was also thinking about that two strikes. You know, what does it mean if he goes up there with two strikes? And I think here the fundamental paradox in that is that if you're going up with two strikes, that's the time when you have to swing at that pitch that you know the umpire is going to call a strike, but you're going to make weak contact on. So I think he was being, this is a case of what he said was a simplification in one sense and not applicable in the other. Because I think that's, I think, you know, he knows that, you know, that's when you let those pitches go.
Right.
And anyway, just for a measure of Mr. Gomez's difficulties, from June 1st to July 23rd, he was hitting .212. His line was .212 batting average, a .253 on base percentage, and a .277 slugging average, and .289 was his BABIP,
right? Yeah,
which is the batting average on balls in play,
right?
Now, before and after that, he was actually a little better at the start of the season, but if we just throw the rest of the season aside from that one 53-day black hole, he's been hitting .288 with a .371 on-base percentage and a .536 slugging average with a .328 batting average on balls in play. Now, he's not striking out less, but my guess is he's making better contact. He's also walking about twice as often. So it's, you know, it's kind of nice when you get something and it fits.
Right.
So basically what he says he's doing is exactly what he's doing. And it was kind of fun to get that.
All right. Interesting stuff. So let's talk about the Tigers now. You get the impression they had played well in August, but after Saturday's game, they're 7-9 this month. Now, they won 3 against the Bay Stars. They won a series, they swept a series, but then they dropped a series at Hiroshima and then swept the Dragons. So they really can't, they don't seem to be able to sustain a run, or they've not demonstrated the ability to sustain a run. And I think part of that is the rotation. They don't come up very big sometimes. And then other times they get a really good pitching performance, but they don't get the offense. So just I looked at some of their wins, and I was going to say, well, they're not playing well against the upper echelon teams, but that's not really the case.
No, they're
equal opportunity losers. They'll beat anybody, and they'll lose to anybody. So they, I can see why they drive their fans nuts.
Yeah, well, or vice versa. we were talking at some length about the pressure of playing for the Tigers, and certainly the fans are part of that, but the fans adore them and they get upset when they lose. And, you know, I understand that part. That's a good thing about being there, is having high expectations. Now, one of the things, I think what you mentioned, one of the things that occurred to me about Saturdays, now we're taping this Sunday morning, and Saturday the Tigers lost and they had 3 hits. And Mauro and I were talking about the young kids, Haraguchi, Shin Takayama, and Hojo.
Hojo, yes.
Fumi and Hojo. Yeah. And those are the 3 guys who got the hits.
Yeah, and I you talked to him about the same thing I talked to him about the young players. Mm-hmm. And I had asked him that, obviously, when I was talking to him 3 weeks ago. And he mentioned those 3 guys, and we talked about them on the show, and we liked them all 3. I gotta believe that Takayama is going to be the best out of all of them, but because he can hit so many different pitches. You know, I've seen him do some Ichiro stuff in the batter's box where he's hitting pitches off the ground, and he's hitting ones high and away, and he's hitting them inside.
Doesn't he remind you a lot of Shogo Akiyama?
Maybe even a better version, because he can drive the ball with the bad pitches that he gets, whereas Akiyama seems to be able to get him out of the infield for hits, but, you know, he's not finding gaps with his.
And the other thing is that he's about 3 years younger. Well, he's not quite where Akiyama is, but he probably will be at least next year. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, he's got a 3-year head start. So that's kind of interesting. And I asked him if it made him feel young or feel old. He said, old. It makes me feel old to see these kids.
Right. Yep. I bet it does. So, yeah, I was looking at the Tigers pitching, and, you know, Fujinami finally won a game the other day for the first time in a long time. So he's not, and I wouldn't say it's performance. I think he's pitching at times well enough to get wins. It's just, you know, he's having a Randy Messenger situation at times where they don't get him runs. And then he's just having a bad inning or a bad game where they just, you know, they just get to him early, and then that's it. The Tigers never come back.
Bad innings seem to, you know, and there's no method behind this answer, but I seem to have seen a number of these bad innings really attack the Tigers. You know, it's sort of like all the things go wrong, and it's usually about the 5th inning, you know, the 3rd time through, or even the 2nd time through the lineup, and it's bam. So, and then again, I don't know that's true or not. I probably should look that up. But one of the things, you know, when we were talking about Hojo's defense, and I was thinking, well, I don't really know, you know, I want to look at his numbers because I haven't seen him play shortstop, to be honest. So I always thought, you know, how has he done? Oh, he looks okay. His numbers look okay. He's got 5 double plays and no errors, which is usually the first thing you look at for a shortstop, and I would say most of the infielders. And I was thinking then that the Tigers have turned 72 double plays this year, which is the lowest in NPB. Okay, now, that's not necessarily a bad thing. Usually when you see a team turn very few double plays, it's because they have very few runners on first base.
Yeah, I think we talked about this. Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Okay, we've talked about that. Now, that's okay.
Well, yeah, we made assumptions about that before.
Right. Okay. Now, what we get is, and I'll follow this with the next part of it, is that the Tigers, however, are sort of middle of the road in terms of allowing runners on base. They're not great. They're not bad. So 72 is pretty low. So, but there's one other part of the equation, which is keeping the runners on first base. This is where the Tigers do really badly.
I think I got an example of that the other day. I saw that.
Okay. Yeah, I know the bat boy was stealing second base. So, anyway, Tigers catchers this year have thrown out 24.8% of the base stealers who've tried to steal against him.
24.8.
Which is the worst in Japan.
I was going to say, it's probably the worst in Japan.
Right. Okay, now, interestingly enough, it's amazing I can actually say that at this time of the morning. The next worst grounded into double play team is SoftBank, for the same reasons, but even more so. Because the Hawks are the worst at throwing. I know, sorry, this doesn't have anything to do with the Central League for a second, but the Hawks are the worst at throwing out runners. And they also allow the fewest base runners, so they've kind of got a reason for being bad at it. Their catchers are their pitchers and catchers aren't holding runners, and there aren't any runners on first base to begin with, so it's no surprise. Now, staying in that vein, or just sort of to give you the other side of the story, the Nippon Ham Fighters opponents have the second worst on base percentage in NPB, but they are the best at holding runners. And they've turned 103 double plays, which is near the top. So, you know, it can be done. They're good at turning double plays. They hold the runners on first, and they don't let them get there in the first place. So it's kind of a nice combination for them.
Yeah, I don't know how to transition back into the Tigers, but good information. I mean, we saw the other day that they just, I saw a game where they just, the opponents were just running wild on the Tigers. Mm-hmm. They were just sending everybody like, hey, coach, go in there, you steal a base. I mean, you know, everybody was taking turns. It was horrible.
Wow.
It just seemed that way. I don't, obviously it wasn't that way, but I've noticed that a little bit, but I think Tsuruoka was a catcher that they were stealing on. I mean, everybody they put back there, even the veterans and the young guys, it just seems like they have trouble slowing down the running game. So it's not all on the catchers, obviously, but
No, I think part of it is also that they've used about 18 different catchers this year, and Haraguchi, who's the best hitter of the bunch, really isn't a catcher. Or at least he was a catcher, but they've been trying to find him a position that he's better at defensively, and they haven't. You know, they found him a position where he could just concentrate on his hitting, but he doesn't seem to have any problem concentrating on his hitting while he's catching. But anyway, so just throw out that little tidbit.
Yeah. So I mean, and like I mentioned, the kid Koyo I hate this guy's Aoyagi. Name because the kanji doesn't say Aoyagi; it says Aoyanagi, but it's Aoyagi. The pitcher Koyo Aoyagi has been, I think he's been actually pretty good for them, considering I don't think they had great expectations for him at the beginning of the season, but he's worked his way up to the first team and into the rotation. And I think he lost the game yesterday at Tokyo Dome, but he didn't pitch all that badly.
He didn't pitch all that badly.
No, he didn't give up a bunch of runs or anything.
Didn't he walk 10 guys?
Oh, yeah, he had 7 walks.
Yeah, okay, so that was him.
And a hit batter.
When I was writing, blogging quite a bit early in the year, I did write a blog entry about Aoyagi in the first game he pitched against the Giants, in which he just basically came out and just mystified him. You know, the arm angle and that nice chin, you know. And he had that sort of like, you know, the Tigers pitchers this year, I've mentioned this before, they kind of, you know, they bring out it's almost like they've got the changeup canned in the Hanshin bullpen, you know? And they've all got their little, they bring it out like, I don't know what, like Cool Whip or something, you know, they all got it. Okay, here's your pitcher, here's your changeup, go get them. I think Aoyagi was not so good the second time around against the Giants, so I think that was probably more of the thing.
Yeah.
But again, I didn't watch the game, so I shouldn't cast aspersions.
Right. But, you know, I had the Tigers, I think, in my preseason prediction. I think I had them finishing 5th above the Dragons, and that's about where they are right now. But you look at Messenger, you look at Fujinami, he's just having a bad year in terms of wins and losses, and can't seem to get out of his own way. Sometimes his career high ERA was 3.5, and that was 2 years ago, and he's at 3.28 at the moment. So he has pitched worse in terms of allowing runs and things. And
sure,
but I think he can. I'm looking at him. Once in a while, it comes up with a big game, but he doesn't seem to be able to win games. And like I said, either he has a bad inning or just a bad night and he's gone. And that's kind of mystifying. Messenger has been pretty good. Nomi has been okay. Off and on.
Nomi's had his days. Iwasato had a lot of days when nobody would score for him. And he kind of got tired of that and stopped having good games.
Right. So they're just weird. I think, you know, they can, you know, again, we talked about it last week. One of the Tigers fans who follows us on Facebook said, hey, the Tigers are charging hard. And it looked like they were, and they probably still can make a run. But with 30-some-odd games left, or around 30-some-odd games left, they better start to make a push in terms of getting consecutive wins together, or they're going to stay there in fifth place or be out of the playoffs. And it's already tough. They're going to have to really win some games to get in. So
yeah, I don't know. I was hoping to get a little insight into the Tigers, into the changes that Tomoaki Kanemoto has brought to the Tigers through Mauro. But you know, he's just sort of like, he's positive about the manager, and he understands it's a tough job, and it was really hard to get any sort of image or positive feedback or accurate sort of get a sensor reading of what Kanemoto's doing. And it's always hard with Tigers managers, because we see what they do on the field, and we hear what they say to the media afterward, and we hear what's written about them, and it's often weird stuff. You know, you get weirder stuff from the Tigers media than from anybody else, you know. And one of the things I noticed, you know, just picking through the news yesterday, was one of the two rookie outfielders he started the season with, he said basically he can't play. And I'm going like, well, he can't play sounds like, well, what were you starting the season with him for?
Right.
You know, if he doesn't have, if he can't add to your team, is this a sudden condition? You know, Kanemoto's gone. He's done some weird stuff this year. And maybe it'll sort itself out. But I'm not pleased with some of the direct. You know, when things get, the going gets bad, I haven't been pleased with the direction he's taken. He reminds me of a certain manager we used to have in Japan who was eager to accept the blame with the media, but wasn't really all that eager accepting blame, period.
I don't like the playing of Hayata Ito. I'm not sure what he's doing to gain the trust of the manager, but I haven't seen anything that has shown me that he can actually hit on this level. And, you know, we talked about the fact that they had signed...
I think he's one of these guys, and here's the difficulty with doing what he's doing. I mean, the Tigers, as we've said, are bringing up all these guys to let him play, but Ito is now 27, I think, and he's been around for a while.
A while, yes.
Yeah, and he definitely can hit. I mean, he's got the tools he needs to hit. He's got the ability to hit. I'm convinced of that from what he's done in the minors and in his time in the first team. But he's a guy who basically needs a program. And I think Kanemoto doesn't really have a program for the players. It's almost like he's evaluating them through the season, which is not necessarily a bad thing. He's given guys lots of opportunities, and that's the good thing. But he's going to have to sort of say, this is where, you know, take each player and say, you know, this is where you are right now, and this is what I need you to do right now. And if you don't do it, you know, this is what I expect from you, and sort of like, these are the things you need to work on. He needs to be a little Ochiai and be clear in his message to the players. I'm not, now I don't know he's not being clear, and I don't know if it's another problem, but, you know, just bringing up all the guys and then sending them back. And I know he's not doing it in a bad way. He's not saying, you know, you're out of here.
Right.
Because that hasn't been the pattern.
But it's tough on the player to be yo-yoed around like that. And
well,
and still grow.
It isn't.
Yeah.
It is and it isn't. But some of these guys do need, you know, basically, I think a lot of these guys, essentially what they're missing to be the best players they can be is just consistent playing time. I think Ito would be a good player if they let him kept him in the lineup. I think the same about Egoshi. I think the same is true about Takayama. It's probably true about Yokota. But the question is, you know, and I'm going to sound a little bit like Wayne Grassick a few years ago, when the Giants offense started to go south about 5 years ago, Wayne said, they're using too many different guys.
Mm.
And one of the things that I constantly mention is that Tatsunori Haro made the Giants a better team by using guys in the minors. But sometimes you use guys that really don't have any business being used just because you think you know the mad, you know, you've got the answer. And you end up playing guys like Fujimura, their second baseman, because you think he can play.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Haro would do that. And I think Kanemoto may be doing that, or I don't know. But, you know, this whole thing is showing that they've got guys who can play. But at some point, you got to say, this is the guy we want, and this isn't the guy we want.
Okay.
And I don't know. At some point, Kanemoto is going to have to, you know, pop that button or flip that switch or whatever it is managers do.
Okay. All right, well, let's talk about the CL race now as a whole. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Tigers, obviously, I said they still, I mean, they're going to have to put together a run to do it, but they're not out of, they have 50 victories and the Bay Stars have 54. So, you know, if they can get a not a sustained run, but a decent run going where they can make up the in the loss column. And I know we'll talk about it later because I think the loss column is going to play a big role in the Pacific League. But they have 62 losses and the Bay Stars have 57. So they're right there. If they can win some games head to head and then make up some of that distance. But it's just so hard, like I said, to sustain wins when you're not getting consistent hitting or consistent pitching. So we talked about it with Tom O'Malley, and I think just making a playoff push in the final 30 is really, really hard. Then I look at the Dragons, and we talked about, obviously, last week, I think they've fallen off a cliff, basically, you know, just yanking the rug out of from under their feet with the manager getting fired. Just it was very uninspiring. They won that first game, they didn't win until Saturday.
Yeah, Friday,
was it?
Yeah, Friday. I think they hit that, and they got to Shuhei Takahashi back, and it's kind of done more. It's done as much harm as it's done good, at least. So.
Yeah, you know, I exchanged an email with one of the players, and he just said, sad, very sad and very tough. And I think that's the way the team has played. They tried to play tough, but they've been very sad with the outcome. So, they're in a position to put some young players in and evaluate. And, you know, I just think they're going to stumble to the finish with the interim manager, and we'll see what they decide to do with that position next year. Now, the Carp look good, and I always talk about how you've got to close this thing out. And, you know, they're not looking beautiful. They're not looking great. They're not winning like they did in the first half of the season where they get out in front and just bury teams. But they're still winning.
Hmm. I think that's accurate. I think they were happy to get Brad Eldred back the other day, and you know he got some results. And the other thing they're happy to have is Takahiro Arai thinking that he's 26 years old again. This guy's just going nuts. I mean, it's like, man.
Yeah,
calm down, dude. You're gonna blow a gasket. You know, don't you know you're past your warranty?
Act like it.
Yeah, I know. Indeed, act. You know, you're making me feel bad. You're making me feel like I'm old. You know, dude, we're only like 15 years apart, but you're making that look like much farther.
Yeah.
So
he has been amazing. I keep tweeting about him. I keep tweeting about his exploits, and of course Kikuchi is right there with him and just doesn't have the sexy hits, but he keeps making plays in the field and he keeps getting key hits.
Okay, and Yoshiyuki Ishihara has been the main catcher this year, and he's playing younger, and Suzuki Sei is sort of rebounding. You know, he's getting back in the news more often, I guess, is what I want to say. I haven't been paying attention to his games on a daily basis, but yeah, they're just back to getting, you know, the production up and down the lineup. One of the things I've noticed about them, they had this little skid a couple of weeks ago, and
right,
it's hard to know again. It's hard to know what to make of it, but they seem to be playing okay. The team, obviously, right now that is on the make are the Giants.
Yeah, well, the one thing I was going to say is the Carp had that game, which they were about to be swept by the Giants.
Mm-hmm.
And with two outs in the ninth inning, Kikuchi hit the game-tying home run, and then they rallied, and I think it was Arai, Arai who knocked in the game winner. I think it was. I can't, I'm not sure. Don't hold me to that. But
that's correct.
And had they lost that game, I think the lead would have been down to 2 games or so, or 2.5, something like that. And since then, they've spread their lead back up to 7 now because they didn't lose that game. And I think, yeah, the Giants, as you were saying, have been just what we talked about last week. They just keep throwing guys out there and figure out a way to win. And last night it was Kan Ohtake, who's striking out 10 batters in a game for the first time in 7 years in his career. And got Ryota Wakia out there playing second, making plays on defense. You've got Seiji Tahara on the mound. You got Shuichi Murata coming up with key defensive plays and hits.
He's having a season. He's, you know, this is the guy. I'm down on him a lot because I had this feeling that he's always kind of has a bad approach, or he's inconsistent. His approach is inconsistent. He easily gets lost at the plate. He does silly things at the plate. He gets frustrated.
Right.
But again, he's having one of these years like he had at the end of the 2009 season when he looked like an MVP for the second half. And I'm going, I looked at, he's batting 300. When does Maranta bat 300 except for the second half of the 2009 season? It's just unreal.
Yeah, but the thing is he's having a really good defensive year too. I mean, whatever he's
like
doing with
he
the bat.
Like he was that year.
Yeah, whatever he's doing with the bat, he's doing as much with the glove.
Well, that's the way he is. He's a pretty much a boom or bust guy. And his career went south as soon as he moved from Yokohama, where he could hit the ball into the seats much more easily with a juiced ball, then he went to Yomiuri and things kind of, you know, hit him hard. But he does have the ability to play there, but it's just that he's kind of like golfer Yoshikawa. He's got all the parts in his game. They just don't come together very often. So, right. But he's doing that this year, and the Giants are kind of, you know, they don't have much of an offense. And I guess the other thing is, Hayato Sakamoto has been very dependable for them on the offensive and defensive side, and Shinosuke Abe has been getting consistently better and better, you know, since he came back in the middle of the season from injury. So I really like the Giants, what they've been doing.
And Garrett Jones, who we had on the show last week, been really, really good. Yeah,
you name it. And Luis Cruz is back. He's going to have to earn his spot back in the lineup because people are playing. And I guess Kazuto Taguchi and Tetsuya Utsumi has come back. I mean, it's like, what else can go right for the Giants? Yamaguchi could get 10 years younger. I'm thinking, you know, what else can go? Everything's kind of going right for them right now. So they're going to be in the thick of things. Now, at the other end, I want to make a mention of, I'm going to hand out the first Better Lucky Than Good Award.
Better Lucky Than Good Award.
And that goes to the Yakult Swallows.
Oh, you know, they had a really good start to the month, and they're 9-6 this month, and they looked like they were going to make a charge, and they're in fourth place, and you know, they're still only 5 games behind the Bay Stars for third place. I like what they're doing.
And that's thus the Better Lucky Than Good. The past 4 weeks, the Swallows starters have had an ERA of 4.66,
ooh,
which is the worst in NPB.
Mm.
Their relievers have had a 1.64 whip, which is worst in NPB.
1.64, please.
Yeah,
please.
I know. Call
right this
police.
Way, sir. Your base is waiting.
Exactly, pretty much. And, of course, they've been hurt. You know, they've lost a bunch of players, so that's on the offensive side. They've scored 86 runs. They've allowed 116. And they have a 12-11 record.
Yeah, over 500.
Yeah, so let's like what they're doing. I like what they're doing in the win column, but you know they're playing like they deserve to get thumped, and it's going to happen. I mean, they've gotten some good performances, but they're missing the big parts, and that's going to catch up with them. So
I think so. Unless they get, you know, yesterday they lost a game where they gave up a bunch of hits, but didn't give up but 2 runs.
It was a close game because they were lucky.
Right,
you know,
right. Exactly what you're saying.
Gritty,
you know,
and lucky.
The 1.64 whip tells you that I think that the Hiroshima had more than 10 hits and couldn't manage but to knock in 1 run, and the other one, like I said, came in on a mistake. So, yeah, they've got their issues. But it should be fun watching this play out at the end. I'm looking forward to it. And the Giants are going to be tough in the playoffs as usual. All right, now in the Pacific League, we've got the Ham Hawks series over this weekend, and we're through two games, obviously, and the Hawks have won the first two. And, you know, this is what pennant races are supposed to be about, teams not giving up and making a charge and coming back. That's what the Fighters are doing. The Hawks getting a little bit complacent, I think, and something that I've always talked about since they've had this run in recent years. And they charge ahead into this it's not a do-or-die situation for them, but I don't think they want to give up I think their lead was 11.5 games.
When the Fighters were in third place, they were as far back as 11.5 game place.
And yep. The Fighters have battled back, obviously. So, you know, I just think they weren't inspired to play hard. And this series, they came in a little bit inspired because I don't think they want to give up this lead. So... You look at the depth of the Hawks, and this is why we picked them to finish for everybody in the God's green earth basically picked them to finish first in the Pacific League this year. It's because they can come up with guys like Yuya Hasegawa who can beat you late in the game. Sure. Tsuyoshi Wada pitches on Friday, and he was just, you know, back to the guy who had the great season before he left for the
year. Kodai Senga pitched on Saturday, and he was pretty good.
Senga on Saturday, and I have a note about him. He became the second pitcher who started as a developmental player to win double digits in a season in games, but he's the first to do it all to win double digits all as a starter.
Ah, okay.
So, you know,
was again, the other guy Tetsuya Yamaguchi?
I'm assuming it was. They didn't say who it was, but he's the only guy I can imagine it would be. So that's that. Especially since they say he's the only guy to do it as a starter. It has to be Tetsuya Yamaguchi of the Giants. So, you know, they just have so much depth. They get hurt. They get guys who are not doing well, and then they bring up a guy like Shuhei Fukuda, and he gets on the base all the time. You can't keep him off base. And the Fighters, despite the greatest efforts of Shohei Ohtani, weren't able to win that game when it looked like they were going to be able to. Ohtani hits a solo home run and puts them up, I think it was in the sixth inning.
Yep, 2-1.
And they're up 2-1, but they can't hold the lead because they can't get Hasegawa out with their left-handed relief ace.
Miyanishi, yeah.
Yeah. So, but that's, I mean, this is what it's supposed to be about.
I'll go with that because the Fighters' bullpen has actually been quite good.
I mean,
you know, they haven't been dominant, nor have the Hawks for that matter, but they've been good. They've been consistently good. They've gotten performances from a lot of guys you wouldn't think are good. But anyway, yeah, interesting. And I'm gonna just ask if you saw what I wrote on your Facebook page.
No, I checked it this morning. I didn't see. Oh, you mean this past week?
Yes.
Yes, I did see, but I don't remember because it was early in the week.
Okay, well, that is your assertion that the Hawks don't play have tended towards late season collapses.
And what I meant was late season, and what you gave me was second half.
Oh, well, okay, I'll go back and fire another bullet at you next time when I change the numbers. But when I look for, you know, when I refine the search from second half to late season.
Right. But, okay. I think what I was pointing to is the fact that 2 years ago they had the stumbling finish.
Yes, 2 years ago. Agreed. Two years ago, they
lost a bunch of games and Oryx won a bunch of games.
So what was the other year?
That's the only year that I can point out
so
to
recently,
right immediately. However, I think last year, too, they had a stumbling finish to the end of the season, but they won the games
after,
they needed to
after win. They clinched the pennant, they stumbled, sure.
Right. Stumble.
That's not a collapse.
All right, you're right. I did write second half, and what I meant was late season, so you are correct, sir.
Okay, so anyway, they have not had second half collapses. They had a bad second half in 2014, but basically they've been better in the second half than they have in the first half. So I thought that was kind of interesting. I was curious because my impression was similar to yours. You know, that 2014 season, like you were discussing strike zones with batters and pitchers, left a mark on us. Anyway, so I did mention that. I did want to point that out. It's basically a 2014 thing. And of course, we do know that in 2010, the Hawks won the league, but they lost the playoffs to the third place team. So I think that also had an impact.
Okay.
And I don't think that was as much as the Hawks, is that the Marines were, you know, their bullpen sort of morphed into pitchers who could really throw strikes.
Right. So. And so in terms of the Pacific League, now that we had them stratified and separated like oil and water early on, so it's no surprise what teams are going to be in the playoffs. But I think now Lotte in third place and 7.5 games behind the Fighters. There's no shame
this is no shame in third place.
There's no shame in finishing in third place, especially with this team, because I think this team has really performed well, considering. I think at some point we're going to discuss why there's really no Manager of the Year award in Japan for some reason.
Well, sure there is. They call it the Shoriki Award, and they give it to whoever wins the Japan series. That's all that matters. You know, just like, okay, you know, push the button. Okay, we've made up our mind. Those meetings with the Shoriki Award. I'm going to digress here for 30 seconds and go on a mini rant.
Oh, no, please don't.
They must be the shortest award meetings. Okay, who should we vote for Shoriki Award? Okay, Japan Series winner. All in favor? Aye. Okay, let's go out and get a burger.
Okay, all right. Getting back on point here, I just want to say that there really is no Manager of the Year award and move on. But I think Stomoita has done a really good job, and I think the team is really doing great. And considering, I mean, they're having a bad stretch, and every team has a bad stretch. I'm not picking on them right now. I didn't expect them to do this well this season. I think they'll bounce back and put things together, and I think they'll be a real nasty team to deal with in the playoffs, like wrestling a badger in a fight pit or something. It's going to be tough to knock them off. I mean,
I thought I made difficult analogies. I'm trying to work on that one. This, you're scaring me.
Good. All right, but we got to move along. Just one note before we get to this week's question, and I saw on Twitter and saw the article that the Oryx Buffaloes, they are already agreed to or asked Jun Ichi Fukuda to come back as manager next year, and I was disgusted. I saw the report, and I would love to know what about this season makes them think that that we want more of this.
Well, according to my source,
uh-huh,
or one source, basically Fukuda is, you have to understand, Oryx, and I've tried to understand this talking to different people connected with Oryx. Basically, Oryx has two people in charge. One of them's the head of baseball operations. One of them isn't. They're essentially split. The organization is split down the middle of people loyal to person A and people loyal to person B. And Fukuda is basically there because he's loyal to one of those people in the chain.
Mm.
And it really doesn't matter what the Buffaloes do until they lose so much that they're going to have to change it.
Well, okay, so they're only 20-plus games under 500. Right. They've only had a team that looked like it was had, you know, second place, maybe third place talent, and they're down at the bottom of the Pacific League below the struggling Lions and the Rakuten Eagles. They've got guys who just don't seem to be inspired, and they want more of it because they've got loyalty issues.
Loyalty, right. And the players like him, which is, I think,
which is obvious. Yeah,
said that the players do love him, and my source said they love him because he doesn't force them to change or do things they don't want to do.
Right, and then that's why they're 20-plus under 500. I don't see any inspiration on the mound. I don't see it at the plate. I don't see it in the field. I don't know what this is. Bizarre to me. This is really bizarre.
And I'll talk about things I don't know, which is, you know, never stopped me before generally. And what you said, they're not inspired. They remind me of a team full of players like Kazuhiro Kiyohara or Alex Cabrera, who are two tremendous hitters, tremendously talented offensive players. Tsuyoshi Nishioka, another guy like that, who, when they're inspired, when they're in the game,
mm-hmm,
and they're really motivated, they're unstoppable. And Oryx is a team like that. They've got the talent to play, but they, you know, when things aren't going well, when they're not motivated,
right,
they look like they belong in the Western League.
Yeah. All right. One note on Shohei Ohtani. He's blasting home runs. He's 5 for 5 on stolen bases this month. has 6 home runs. I'm getting very suspicious, though, as to why a blister on his finger has kept him off the mound.
You too, huh?
Yeah.
You're thinking like, at first, is he thinking this batting thing's a heck of a lot easier than that pitching thing?
I don't know if it's him. I just don't get it. I don't understand. Maybe they want him in the lineup more, but they're going into this series without an ace on the mound, and they could get swept. And I think had he been pitching, they'd had a better chance to win with, and I'm saying this before Kato throws on Sunday, obviously, but they've got this young pitcher, Kato, who's going to throw on Sunday, and geez, I'd rather have Shohei out there than this guy. So I don't know. It's just weird that he hasn't pitched. The last time we saw him on the mound was July 24th,
was it?
As a reliever, yeah. You know, blisters, cramps, all these other things that he's had in the past. Yeah, I just don't.
What's up with that? I mean, I don't
want to ask.
Yeah, I know. I'm curious too. And here's the other thing: was at least about a week ago, they were saying he threw a bullpen in their 2 series ago, and then he was scheduled to throw a bullpen during the last Rock 10 series during the week. Now, I never heard a report that he actually threw that bullpen, so I think that's the issue. Normally, you know how it is. When guys throw a bullpen, they tell you how many times the catchers were squatting.
Right, yep.
You know, they fill you in.
Yeah,
you know, there's no mystery. So he went to the bullpen, and at Kobo Stadium Miyagi, you can't miss that he's in the bullpen because you can see it from the field. So there wasn't a case of he was throwing in the bullpen. He did not throw the scheduled bullpen.
Yeah. Weird.
Okay, so I think, but I was watching the starting pitcher announcement, and I almost expected him not to be in the lineup today. I expect them to be pitching on Sunday against the Hawks, and he's not.
So. Yeah. Strange. All right, let's go to fielding questions. All right, this is an MP3, and it comes from Mike in Washington, D.C.
Hey, John and Jim. In the United States, fantasy baseball is a huge part of American baseball culture now. But I haven't really seen or I'm not aware of a Japanese equivalent. Is there MPB fantasy baseball? And if not, why not? Do fans just not like it, or is it because of gambling laws? Thanks.
All right, thanks a lot, Mike. We appreciate the question. Now, I went to Michael Westphe because I know that in the past he had been involved with some fantasy baseball stuff, and I don't know anything about it. I've never been interested in it. We'll get into that in a second, but I knew that he had some information on it, so I asked him, and he came up with this.
Hi, John. Thanks for passing the question along. I think I can elaborate a bit on this subject. First, though, a disclaimer. I work with Fantasy Sports Japan, so my perception may be biased toward our services. Fantasy Sports Japan has been providing fantasy baseball, both NPB and MLB, as well as other fantasy sports to the Japanese audience for over 20 years. There is a strong core of fans scattered throughout the country who love the games. When pitted against North American players for some of the playoff games, that is, games over a short term, they are well positioned to do well enough to finish in the top 6 percentile. Outside of FSJ, there have been many attempts to bring fantasy sports to Japan. Yahoo Japan had tried with NPB, J-League, and some of the North American sports. It just didn't catch on for them as it did for the North American Yahoo fantasy games. Sega had their Pro Yakyu Chimo Otsukuro, or Let's Make a Professional Baseball Team game, for the PlayStation and PCs. I'm sure that they sold a lot of games, but I haven't seen any ads for it in quite a while. Several newspapers and others have also tried, but none have had any traction. Is there interest? Yes. But if the U.S. market is a 10, then it's really hardly a 2 or 3 here in Japan, despite many groups with deep pockets attempting to get in on the act. Back to you, John and Jim.
Well, thanks, Michael.
Yeah, thank you, sir. Thank you. Appreciate it. So I hope that answers the question on that side. What do you have, Jim?
Well, Michael and I actually, I knew Michael before he was involved in fantasy baseball. And we were in a fantasy baseball league, actually. He mm-hmm. and the current San Francisco Giants scout Jeff Kusumoto and I were in a fantasy baseball league. Jeff was in there before me. That's where I met Jeff. And I did that for a couple of years, and then I was actually in the Fantasy Sports Japan League, which I did well in 1 year. But you know, I found it to be very annoying because I love to win, and I love to watch the games, and I found myself just wrapped up in spending too much time. Mm-hmm. I was just destroying my productive time by thinking about, you know, what, oh, this player, I think he had a twitch. You know, should I sell him or should I buy him or should I bench him or whatnot? Just an incredible waste of time for me. So I got out of it. But, fantasy sports obviously is a huge factor in where baseball information went in the United States.
Right.
And unfortunately, it didn't in Japan because we... You know, if it had in Japan, we might have had more access to data as opposed to everybody, NPB hiding everything.
Right. For me, what I can tell you is I've just never been into fantasy. Back when I was a young scribe, a young part-timer working in Orange County, California, they used to call it points leagues. And I just couldn't get into it from the start, and I'll tell you why. For me, it was I just like to watch the game. I like to be focused on who does what and the results and all that stuff. But I prefer not to watch it with a kind of a tainted eye, in that I'm rooting for a guy to do something because he's going to get me extra points versus rooting against a guy I like because I can get points if he gives up a home run to some guy I'm, you know, who's on my team. So it just contorts and twists my view of the game. And so I just like to look at it as watch games purely for the entertainment value. And the other thing is, as Jim can attest to, is that I think what points, and I've fallen back into the 80s here, what the fantasy leagues do is encourage you to watch any game at any time and watch any player. And
I think is a good thing.
And I'll do that on my own. I don't need the inspiration. I'll watch any game at any hour. If I see a player I don't know, makes me want to watch him more, see what he does at the plate or see what he does on the mound. I don't worry so much about the result. I look at the potential or the lack of potential or the age of the player or something like that. So I'm going to watch anyway. But I think these fantasy leagues encourage you to watch and study more. And the reason I think it's not so successful in Japan or not so popular, I just think it's cultural.
It has a huge thing to do with the gambling laws because they can't give out cash prizes.
But they can get around that. Just like pachinko, I think they could find a way to get around.
Pachinko is sort of like they get around it because don't ask, don't tell.
And just like you said with the prop style betting that goes on that you talked about in terms of walks and things like that, the little prop bets that go on in baseball, I think there's that kind of thing exists, and that's just as big as fantasy baseball.
That's bigger. I mean,
in the States. In the States I would compare it to. But
although we just had speaking of that, we did have Korean players have been admitting to spot fixing in Korea, which is that one about, you know, people betting on props, on small things like hitting batters in the first inning or allowing runs in the
first inning, or who steals a base, or how many guys a pitcher walks. Things.
That's an issue.
Yeah. Okay. So I think it's cultural too. I don't think that Japanese people feel that comfortable doing it in the first place, especially if it's borderline legal or not. So I think a lot of the fans they're just really passionate about their teams and their guys, and they don't care so much what the other team's players do.
I don't know.
We don't have a lot of player movement. We don't have a lot of trades. We don't have a lot of guys moving around as free agency. So a lot of the guys you see early on in their careers, they stay with the team for that first, whatever it is, 8 years that they're supposed to be, or 9 years that they're supposed to be a part of that team. They're usually there. And so it makes it really easy to root for your own guys and not worry about what's going on other teams. Mm. I think that plays a small role in it.
I think it plays a small role in it. I think it's obviously a very complex answer, which I don't think we don't have the answer to. But I think, that's probably part of it. And you're such a purist. You're like a little, you're like a baseball monk. You know, you're
a baseball monk. I love that.
You're attached to the game on a kind of a level that few of us aspire to or desire to achieve. You know, it's like, I'm always impressed and scared at the same time.
Hashtag high heat.
I like that. Anybody who's got artistic ability, feel free to make some kind of caricature of me as a baseball monk. I would love that. And nothing to do with the Padres, of course.
He's got the hair to go with it, though.
That's right. Well, I can actually take it all off next time. How's that? All right, anyone else who has a question or comment, please send it to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Tweet us at #highheat@jbwpodcast, or you can go to our Facebook page and leave us a comment there. Look for us on iTunes.
Thanks a lot, and thanks for listening.
Enjoy your baseball.